saw you today. That's over from Yankee Wiesenfeld.
We all know the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Beis Halacha Aleph, who says that the litmus test of whether or not you're a real Baal Tshuva and you've done Tshuva is if you get into exactly the same situation the second time, the same koichas, the same place, with the same cheshek, with the same everything, and last time you did the Aveira, and this time you hold yourself back and you don't do the Aveira. So far in my outings in Torahway in Manchester, I've done two Aveiras, which I was criticized for. One was that I didn't explain all the terms that I used in Lashon HaKodesh into English. There was one person complained that I used the word Tanai for about 15 minutes without explaining what a Tanai is. And the second thing is, the last time I thought the shiur was 40 minutes and it was only 30, so I finished late. So today I've got the opportunity, Bo'is HaMokom, Bo'is HaKeshik, Bo'is HaZman, etc., etc., to try and be Masakin, at least to finish on time, and Masakin means to correct. I've got to explain the terms as well. So, first of all, as always, I want to tell you that I want to thank the Rav Menachem Dovid for founding Torah Way and for inspiring us in Golders Green without Torah Way, and ask me again to share some Torah thoughts with you. The Torah thoughts that I'm sharing with you today are my source sheet is a shiur that I heard in London before the holidays from Moshe Batzal Grosnas, well worth listening to. I used it as the source for the shiurim that I gave in Spain over the holidays, every day after Shachris. And today I've got the opportunity to share some of these things, which are very, very interesting, with you. When I go to court from time to time in the course of my professional work, I have to stand in front of the judge, and I solemnly and sincerely affirm that the evidence that I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I've often asked the barristers that I'm dealing with, the QCs, what's the nafkimina between the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Why can't I just stand there and say to the judge, the evidence that I shall give shall be the truth? What's wrong with that? What's pshat, nish the whole truth, and nish but nothing but the truth, etc. And the taka don't know. One of the barristers said to me, he said, I've been a QC for I don't know how many years. I hear this oath sworn in court a few times a day. Never stop to think about it. What's the nafkimina? But we'll find out today that there is a big nafkamina between the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth. How does it work? What? It's not they got the yeah. So the first one, the truth is easy, right? I give an undertaking to the judge that I shall tell the truth. That's easy. It's facts. It's exactly what happened. I'm not embellishing it. I'm not exaggerating it, right? The Ma'aser Shehoyu Azovi Sigvein. Reuven killed Shimon at a certain place, at a certain time, and I tell the truth, it's what I saw. Reuven was Mechalel Shabbos, a certain place, a certain time, I tell the truth, exactly what I saw. Reuven spoke Lashon Hara, I hope there's no Reuvens in the room, but if yes, apology. Didn't mean you, Dafka. Yeah, so, yeah, but you give evidence, right? You give evidence about something that actually happened. That's simple, that's the truth. What's the problem, what's the issue of the whole truth? What's shot in the whole truth as against the truth? It's not near enough. So what's the issue of the whole truth? So barristers coach witnesses that you should give very short, sharp answers. So the more you're very tempted when you get asked a question to darshan, to explain it, to add things to it. But anything that you say extra, the other side, the barrister, is going to use to cross-examine you and to interrogate you. He's going to use your words to twist and to question and to work out, etc. So they say, if the answer is yes, give an answer yes. The answer is no, just say no. Don't say no but, or yes in addition to, etc. Short, sharp answers to the point. But there are times when saying an incomplete truth, in other words, a short answer, is not sufficient. Rabbi Dessler gives a poshta example. He says, if somebody asks you, is the library open on Wednesday? So he said, you answer yes, and that is the truth. You answer no, that is the truth. Because the library is open half day, as he said. So the library closes at 1. So if I give the answer, yes, the library is open on Wednesday, that's the truth. But it's not the whole truth. If I give the answer, the library is closed on Wednesday, that's also the truth. but not the whole truth. If I say the library is open in the morning and it closes at 1 and in the afternoon it's closed, that is the whole truth. That's Rabbi Dessler gives a very simple example. Where do we find this? We find that Avraham Avinu spoke to the Malachim and he said to them, Ve'ekcho pas lechem, v'sa'adu lebchem v'achat ha'avayru. So what did he say? I'm going to serve you with dry bread. Come in. Yeah, and what was he planning? He was planning on the Suda. He was planning on the feast to prepare a massive Suda for them with all the delicacies, etc., as the Torah explains. And he knew that lechatchila. And nevertheless, the Gemara says in Bava Metzia that tzadikim is oimrim ma'at v'oisim harbe, and shoyim oimrim harbe v'afilum ma'atein oisim. That a tzadik only says a little bit, and nevertheless he does much more than that. But technically speaking, it's not the whole truth. It's only part of the truth. Because he was saying, I'll give you bread. I'm going to give you tongue as well. I'm going to give you milk as well. I'm going to give you cheese, etc. He didn't say any of that. He told part of the truth. Alpha Pekain, Chazal HaMashabeach, that he did something good. We'll discuss it in a minute. What happens in the Shidduch? Somebody asked you a question. Why, so what could be a question? They could ask you, tell me that this prospective Mechitten, yeah, as a Bali Choylus, he has money. So you answer, yeah, was highest. He inherited a fortune. He blew it afterwards. Yeah, but if you only say he inherited a fortune, and you don't add the extra bit that he blew it, that he lost the money afterwards, then it's going to be the truth. He Taka inherited a fortune. No lies were told, but it's an incomplete truth. In the Chofetz Chaim in Klal Yud, when he speaks about Loshon Hara L'Toyeles, there are occasions when we're allowed to, it's even a mitzvah, to tell Loshon Hara L'Toyeles. There are 7 conditions involved, plus some other conditions. The Chofetz Chaim goes through each of them. You have to validate it, you have to explain, etc., etc. But one of the conditions that he mentions in the Be'er Ma'im Chaim in Klal Tes is as follows. And the example given in a sefer that I use for Chofetz Chaim Shir is that, supposing that there is a business, and there's a manager working there. Let's say it's an office, and there's a manager who's running the office, and he sees that one of his employees is coming to work late every morning. Every morning, Plony comes late to work. He rolls in half an hour late, 3/4 of an hour late, an hour late sometimes, and if anybody wants him in between, they have to cover for him and take a message, and etc. He speaks to him once, he speaks to him twice, he speaks to him 5 times, but this goes on. Then what is his duty? His duty as a manager is to report back to the boss and to tell the boss, you're paying this guy for 40 hours a week, he's not doing 40 hours a week, or you're paying him for 9, he might be making up the time at another time, but you're paying him to be there at 9 o'clock. He's not there at 9 o'clock, he comes in 9:45 and 10 o'clock, etc., etc. That is Loshon Hara L'Toyeles, and Adarabba, the Loshon Hara L'Toyeles, that's his job. That's what he's there for. He's a manager, and he's supposed to be doing that. Therefore, he has a chiyuv, so he has to comply with all the conditions of Loshon Hara L'Toyeles, but he has to tell the boss what's going on. Now, says the Chofetz Chaim, if he knows of mitigating circumstances which would change the attitude of the boss to him, in other words, he can come to the boss and he can say, I've spoken to him many times, he still persistently comes late, every day he's late, and this time he came that time, and on Wednesday he came at night, five past ten, and etc., etc. He's telling the truth. But if he knows of mitigating circumstances, he knows of this person's situation at home, he's got a wife who's not well, he's got children who are not well, he's got other obligations, he's got parents, he learns till 3 o'clock in the morning, he goes collecting every night for tzedakah, whatever it is, there are circumstances which would mitigate the attitude of the boss towards him. Says the Chofetz Chaim, if he doesn't tell the whole truth, he only tells the facts, he's not telling any lies, but nevertheless, says the Chofetz Chaim, he calls it Sheker and Moiti Shemra. In other words, sometimes it's correct to say part of the truth, as in the case of Avraham Avinu, for instance, and sometimes it's Sheker and it's Moiti Shemra to only tell part of the truth and not the whole truth. The rule is, says the Chofetz Chaim Poshet, said the Chofetz Chaim says, if no harm can come from telling only part of the truth, tell part of the truth. No harm could come from Avraham Avinu being modest and saying, you know, Oimrim ma'at v'aseh harbe. There's no harm from that. There's no possible risk. So therefore, from such a thing, there's an inyan in the Chazal HaMashabeach to say less. But if there is a chance, says the Chofetz Chaim, that some harm could come out of the fact that you are telling only part of the truth, then you have to tell the whole truth. So this is our second. We've got the truth now, and now we understand the whole truth. There are times when people can say the truth, but because it's incomplete, it can cause harm. And then that in halacha becomes sheker. It's not emes, it's sheker. Even though he didn't say a word wrong, and he told the right thing. Now we come to nothing but the truth. Nothing but the truth is probably the most interesting of them, with some very, very fascinating, very interesting cases that have occurred in Chazal over the last few hundred years. Briefly, without going into the sugyas in each case, just a couple of examples from Chumash of where we find that a sheker becomes an emes, or sheker is defined as emes. The standard one is Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, "Vatitzak Sora b'kirbo leimor." When Sora was told that she was going to have a baby, and she was 89 years old at the time, "Vatitzak Sora b'kirbo leimor," and she said, "Acharei v'loisi hoisoli etno." V'adoni is okay. I'm old and I'm past it. V'adoni is okay, and my husband is as well. He's an old man. He's not capable of fathering a child at this age at 99. "Vayoyim Hashem el Avram." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Avram, "Lomo zeh tzocha kosor leimor, ha'ufam nom eilet, va'ani zokanti." So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Avram Avinu what Sora was thinking, he changed it. And the Gemara says that you're allowed to change. The Rebbeinu Shlom himself is giving an example that you're allowed to change the facts, leman ha'shalom. The Gemara says, "Godol ha'shalom," so even the Rebbeinu Shlom changed the facts. Later on, you find that Yaakov Avinu goes into Yitzchok in order to be mekabel the brachas. Yes, it was alpi the tzivui of his mother, and his mother got it alpi nevuah. But he said, "Onoichi Esav b'chayrecho," and you could add, "Yeah, mekem fatachen onoichi and Esav is b'chayrecho." Obasof kosof. He gave Yitzchok Avinu the impression that he was Esav when really he was Yaakov, and the truth is that he was right to do that, and that became emes. But the words themselves are not MS, they're not truth in the conventional sense that we would understand in a court of law. He wasn't telling the truth. And Alpha began. And later on, when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers, yeah, his brothers came to Yosef, and they said, "Ovicho tzivo lifnei moiso leimor, ono sono pesha achecha v'chatozom." Yeah, your father commanded that you should be moichelas. And their father never commanded they should be moichelas. Novos leman hashalom, the Gemara says you're allowed to be mishana b'dibure. So we find that we've got makoros already in Torah, and we've got makoros in Chazal, that sometimes telling something which is not factual, telling something which is even a lie and even made up, could be emes. We redefine emes, says Rabbi Dessler, as that which the Rabbeinu Shlom wants us to say. Emes is that which the Torah demands of us, which is correct al pi halacha, that becomes the emes. And it may not be the factual truth in the conventional sense, the way we understand it. So that is the rule. So let's have a look at a few interesting, I think interesting cases. Rav Moshe Batal Grosnas brought a Shalas Tshuvas Ugas Eliyahu. Shalas Tshuvas Ugas Eliyahu was a Shalas Tshuvas Sefer written by a Rabbi Eliyahu Rossoff, who was a Rav in a shul, in a synagogue, somewhere in New York. The Sefer was published in 1960. And that happened to many, many Litvische Talmidei Chachomim, who learned in the Litvische yeshivas, and then they emigrated. They came to England, there were many of them in England as well. We all know examples of them. I'm sure there were in Manchester as well, and in Glasgow and in London. Rabbonim, who were big, big Talmidei Chachomim, Eluim in their time, who learnt in the big yeshivas in the litter. And for some reason or another, they ended up in England, they ended up in America, they ended up in various places. They didn't have panosa, and they became rabbis in synagogues of people who were not really interested in learning, you know, Ashtikel Reb Chaim or Aktsos. And he was one of these rabbonim, a big Talmud Chochem, and he writes there, by the way, Agav, yeah, the name Ugas Eliyahu was very strange to me, the cake of Eliyahu. Where do you get the Shalos Tshuvas Ugas Eliyahu? So at first I didn't know at all anything about it, I didn't do my research, so I thought like this, on the front page of the Shalos Tshuvas Ugas Eliyahu, it says, Mechaba Sefer Kisei Eliyahu, or Mechaba Sefer Yad Eliyahu. So I thought that followed like in the progression. You know, he sat on the chair and there was Yad Eliyahu, and the Yad Eliyahu was holding a piece of his wife's cake. So that became Ugas Eliyahu. No, but it couldn't be because the Rebbetzin, it couldn't be the Rebbetzin Rossov's piece of cake. Why? Because there's a previous Shalos HaTshuvos Ugas Eliyahu, which was published in Italy in Livorno 150 years earlier at 1810. So therefore there must be another Makor. It wasn't just Rebbetzin Rossov's cake. So basically, just Agav, this is in brackets, if you like, there are two Ugas Eliyahus in Melochim, in Sefer Melochim. There's one Ugas Eliyahu, which is when the Eliyahu arrived, the Rebbein Shem told him, this was after they were in the middle of the famine. Yeah, we said last night, Ish talumoto otza sholoshonim. 3 years there was no rain, and there was a famine, and there was a tremendous shortage of food. Eliyahu Novi was arriving, and the Rebbein Shem told him to go to a place called Tzorfas, which is a place on the coast, and to approach the Ish of Tzorfatis. He met her there, and he asked her for water. He was arriving from a journey. She gave him water. He then said, could you give me something to eat? And she said to him, I don't have anything. She said, all I have is a little bit of oil, a little bit of flour. I'm going to bake one cake, one ugo, and I'm going to share it between myself and my son. And after that, we're going to die. And Eliyahu Novi said, take the oil, take the flour, and bake it, and give it to me, asili ugo achas, make me an ugo, give it to me to eat, and after that you will still have flour, and you will still have oil, and you'll bake another cake for yourself, and so on, like indefinitely, you'll be able to be mefarnes yourself from the oil and the flour. We said again last night, ish lemanoi nisporchu kad v'tzapachas. The cud of the oil and the tzapachas of the flour, right, they were nisborech, and that's what happened. She baked it, she gave it to him, and then afterwards she baked and she could carry on giving and feeding herself and her son until the famine was over. So that's one Ugas Eliyahu. There's another Ugas Eliyahu later in Melochim when Achav and Izevel had killed out all the Nevi'im, and Izevel had told Eliyahu Novi, she sent a message to Eliyahu Novi saying, we've killed out all the Nevi'im and you're next. So Eliyahu Novi had to go on the run, and he ran into the Midbar Be'esheva, and he was exhausted. He lay down under a tree. It says a roisim. In English they translate it as a juniper tree, and he fell asleep there, and he had a dream, and the Malach told him that there is a cake. Have a look, there is an ugo above your head, and there was an ugo above there, and he was told to eat from it, and it says that food sustained him for 40 days and 40 nights after that until he reached Haro Lekim Chorevo. He travelled through the desert for 40 days, 40 nights on that Ugo. So there are two Ugas Eliyahus in Chazal, so therefore there is a Makor for the name of the Tshuva. So in Shal's Tshuva Ugas Eliyahu, he says that he had a Shaila which was asked to him by one of his members. One of his members phoned him up, he says, by telephone, and he asked him as a Shaila. He said that he heard that this member was sitting Shiva, and the last day of the Shiva worked out to be on a Shabbos. And the member said that he had heard from someone that there is that the norm is that you finish the Shiva in the morning and you say that part of the day is like the whole day, miktasayon kukuloi, and that you only have to sit Shiva for a few minutes in the morning, and then after that the Shiva is over. And his member asked him whether or not that was true. Why did he want to know that? Because during the Shiva, he'd been at home. He hadn't been into the business. His wife had been running the business, he said, and she made a mess of it. She said everything was wrong. Everything she did was wrong. And he was dying to get back to the business in order to start putting things right. So if he could get up already on Shabbos morning, then he could go to work on Shabbos already. What? Shabbos morning. Saturday morning. Yeah. So if he could get up on Shabbos morning, then he could get straight to the business and he could start putting right to the mess that his wife had made. Masha Enkein, if he would have to wait till the end of the day, he couldn't get to the business till Sunday. So on the spot, Rabbi Leo Rassov told him that you should know that the people who claim that you get up after the Shiva in the morning very early, yeah, they're amayores, they're ignorant people. Said that people do it, but they're wrong. The halacha is that you have to keep the Shiva right till the end of the Shiva. Of course, there are shittas like that. The Sfardim keep the Shiva right till the end. So, yeah, but we do Miksasayim Kekula, they don't. So therefore, he gave them that psak, and he said, no, you have to sit Shiva for the entire period till the end of Shabbos. And that way he saved him from the Chilul Shabbos. And afterwards he writes there, afterwards I had regrets. I started thinking to myself, I told him a sheker. I told him a lie. The halacha is that he could have got up in the morning. Yeah, I had a good motive. I had a good reason. But is it a sheker or isn't it a sheker? And he starts being done in a great length with rayas from here and from there, from different places, as to whether or not it's mutter to say such a thing. We'll look at some of the rayas, which are actually very, very interesting. There's one raya from a case that occurred in Baghdad. In Baghdad, the Rav was the Ben Ish Chai, and he wrote a sefer, Shalas Teshuvas Torah Lishmo. And Shalas Teshuvas Torah Lishmo, he brings down Azar Shala, which was brought to him. A man died, and he left two sons and a daughter. And he hadn't written a tzavor, he had not written a will. And therefore, al pi halacha, the entire Yerusha, the entire inheritance, would go to the two sons, and the daughter gets nothing. She wasn't happy with that. She asked her brothers to share the Yerusha with her. And they refused. They said, well, say, they're not interested in the money, of course. They're only interested in the halacha, you know. So therefore, but al pi halacha, unfortunately, you don't get anything. So she announced her intention to take legal advice and to take them to court and to get her chelik of the Yerusha in the non-Jewish courts. So they came to the Ben Ish Chai and they asked the Shaila as follows. Would it be mutter for them to forge a tzavor? They said they will get a professional forger, someone who won't get caught, etc. Obviously, if the father left a tzavor, a will, in which he wrote specifically that my sons get the entire Yerusha and my daughter doesn't get, then that would be acceptable in a non-Jewish court as well, if it was a valid document. And they had a professional master forger who could make it, you know, who knew exactly how to do it. And the shaila was whether or not they're allowed to do that. And the Ben Ish Chai paskens, not only are you allowed to, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah in order to be mekayim, the din Torah. And the din Torah said that when the father didn't leave a tzavor and he didn't give anything to the daughter mechayim, that the sons get everything. Said, you're being mekayim the tzavor. You'll be mekayim the din Torah, he says, and you're worried that it's going to create who knows what sort of a backlash. For instance, as you asked me at the time, the daughter's going to become very upset. Because until now she knows that her father was a shlemazel, he didn't leave a will. But now, if there's a will which says that I'm leaving everything to the sons, then she sees that her father cut her out, mekayim. She'll have a sinner. Says the Ben Ish Chai, we don't worry about that. If you do things al pi halacha, if you do the things that the Torah demands and that the Torah expects, then you don't need to worry. The result will always be shalom. And therefore he told them to go ahead and do it. Unfortunately, in all these shailas for him, you get the shaila that was asked to the Rav and what he paskened. But you don't get the PS at the end to say what actually happened. Everybody wants to know, did they do it? Did they get away with it? The answer is, I don't know. And that happens in a number of these cases where the shaila is there, la halacha. And the person is done la halacha what the psak is. And then he gave his psak. But you don't get afterwards the epilogue, yeah, or the sequel, which tells you that this is what actually happened. Another case, in the Shaila Siyavitz, the Reb Yaakov Emden, who lived in a town called Altona. And if not for Rabbi Yaakov Emden, we probably would never ever have heard of Altona, and that's Noigea to the Maisa. So what happened? He lived in Altona for most of his life. He was the Poisek Hador. He mamash was. He was the jewel of Altona, but he learned in a Beis HaMedrash, a small Beis HaMedrash, which was attached to his house, and he davened there as well. In the town, there was a large shul, which belonged to the Kehillah. And there was pressure from the shul that he should come and daven with them. That although you're not the rov of the shul, and you're not the rov of the kehillah, but nevertheless, you're a chosh of a personality, and you're the reason, Taka, why the whole world knows you've put Altona onto the map. And therefore, you should come and daven with us, at least occasionally. There were negotiations. Why didn't he want to daven in the shul? Because the shul, davening in the shul, in the big shul, left a lot to be desired. There are a number of people who were not Shomer Shabbos, who came to the shul. There was a lot of talking. There was a lot of mixing after davening. It was a whole fashion parade, etc., etc. It wasn't the type of davening that Rabbi Yaakov Emden wanted, and therefore he davened in his shtiebel, he davened in his Beis HaMedrash with a small minion of 10, 15 people, however many people he had. But they pressured him, and in the end it was decided that once every so often, Rabbi Yaakov Emden would come to the shul and daven with his minion. They would all come and join in the tefillah in the shul once every so often. I think it mentions, he mentions there that it was the first day Yom Tov. Maybe the first day of each Yom Tov, he would attend the synagogue. And Taka, that's what happened. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Emden had amongst his members of his shtiebel, there was a Geir Tzedek. Very, very frum, very intense, a real verfrumter. This guy came along, Rabbi Yaakov Emden came along to shul, he sat in the corner somewhere, he gets on with his davening, there's noise behind, people are schmoozing, people are chatting, people coming in late, v'chole, v'chole, it doesn't bother him too much. But this Geir Tzedek couldn't stand it. He was there, and it was bothering him, this tefillah, this nishka tefillah, and nishka no decorum, and no respect for the Beis HaMedrash, etc., etc. The straw that broke the camel's back was when a member of the shul came in to davening, late, smoking. Smoking in the Beis HaMedrash, on Shabbos, he came into the davening. And that was already the last straw. For that, the Geir Tzedek couldn't stand it. The Geir Tzedek went up to him and started shouting at him, "Ah, chutzpah, and how can you do such a thing? And in the Beis HaMedrash, and you chayv misa, and skila, and in front of everybody, you know." And the guy said to him, "Get lost. Mind your own business. Who are you anyway? You don't even belong to this shul. Yeah? I'm a member, and ich bin a psachosh v'yid, you know, etc., etc. Get lost. Leave me alone." And the Geir said, "No, I've got a chiyuv, I have to make a machor," and he wouldn't leave him alone. This guy pulled out a knife and stabbed the Geir Tzedek. He stabbed him and he wounded him severely. The guy was rushed off to hospital, and within a week he was dead. The police got involved, and they arrested the Ritzach. They arrested the Ritzach, and the intention was they were going to put him on trial. They were going to put him on trial, and achas dochso lehomis, he was liable to be hung. The people in the Kehillah started getting involved. How can we save our friend from Miso? How can we save our friend from being executed by the courts? And they came up with two plans. They discussed it with lawyers, etc., etc. One plan was that a whole load of them would go to court and would give evidence that this was a case of mistaken identity, and it was somebody else who did the stabbing. It was somebody who came in from the court from outside, and he looked like this man, but he wasn't the same. Yeah, similar height, similar build, but it wasn't him, etc., etc. There was one. And the other possibility was shoichad. The other possibility was that they were going to bribe the judge. And the shaila, should we be doing that? They went to the Yavetz, and they asked him, "What should we do? We're going to run out of time, so therefore I'm going to finish this one quickly. I've got other examples. If you want to listen to the shiur of Rav Moshe Bezalel Grosnas, there are other examples like this, one after the other, fascinating examples." The Yavetz had gehalten that we shouldn't do anything. The Yavetz had gehalten, the man is chayav misa twice over. He's chayav misa for chilul Shabbos, he's chayav misa for retzicha. And he did the chilul Shabbos with hasra, and with Edim, because this Geir Tzedek gave him Asra, and there were Edim in the shul, obviously. There were plenty of kosher Edim. So he said, he's Chayav Misa, and he needs the Kapora of Misa. He said, let the courts kill him. That was what the Abbot said. We're not going to do any Ishtadlus against it. We should allow the courts to take the natural course, and if necessary, execute him. The Chasam Sofer was dead against it. The Chasam Sofer said, the Hayos, the procedure in the courts, and the method of hanging, where he's to be Chayav either Saif or Skila, and who they accept as an aid, etc., etc., the rules are different. Even though the result is the end, the result at the end is the same, Afal Pekin, the Chasam Sofer, was against it. One thing interesting is that nobody was worried about Eidos Sheker. Nobody said Midvar Sheker Tirchok. Nobody said that if you would go to court and give evidence, the Chasam Sofer held that they should go to court, they should give false evidence, they should bribe the judge and do whatever you can for Pekuach Nefesh to save the life of this Ritzeach, because Al Pi Halacha, we can't do, Bezdin can't affect the Misa Bizman Hazer. Oh, but interesting is, so therefore, the result that I'm going to just want to finish off is to say that when it comes to, we've said what the truth is, the truth. The whole truth means that you say the entire facts in order to not to create any damage. And nothing but the truth is pshat, that there are times in halacha when what we regard as conventional truth is sheker. And what we regard what a goy regards as the truth would be sheker, because we have to change. Mishanim mipnei asholoim, mishanim mipnei there are various halachas and various situations throughout Chazal when we have to say something sometimes which is not the conventional truth. In a court, I can't do that. The judge doesn't expect me to do that. To slant the evidence in order to assist my client, I can't do. That's nothing but the truth. In the court, the judge will say, you can't change it because the halacha wants this. You can't change it because the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants this. The evidence that I expect you to give me in a non-Jewish court to the judge is what we call the conventional truth. And that's nothing but the truth. Don't start with your lobdish shtikelech and your Torah way shiurim.